The Jewish Federation of Greater Chattanooga hosts an annual First Amendment dinner with guest speakers ranging from politicians and legal experts to educators and community leaders. The dinner for 2015 was held at the Jewish Community Center on July 14th. Today's story reflects the conversation I had with guest speaker of the dinner, Morris Dees. The First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America states, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." As part of the programming at the Jewish Federation of Greater Chattanooga, the organization recognizes those who have served in the military by hosting a dinner with speakers addressing the First Amendment of the Constitution that military members swore to protect. The Southern Poverty Law Center is a nonprofit advocacy group that formed in 1971 with a mission to fight hate, bigotry, and seek justice for the most vulnerable members of society. Morris Dees co-founded the organization with the late civil rights leader Julian Bond. I began this interview by asking Morris Dees about his history of standing up for civil rights.
People have been fighting against intolerance and hate for years. The civil rights movement dealt with that certainly, and I was in high school when that happened. So I haven't let it come up with anything quite new, but we're just continuing that work that people have been doing for many years. I think the thing that we're noted for the most is figuring out a way to go after hate groups by bankrupting them, hitting them in a pocketbook for acts of violence that their members commit.
And that falls back to the KKK lawsuit and some of the others.
Right. We put about 12 major hate groups out of business, the Aryan Nations, neo-Nazi groups, white Aryan resistance, KKK groups, and others. But that doesn't mean that the hate groups are gone. The big ones with property and buildings and the mode they used to operate in with big printing presses and things, that doesn't exist anymore. We've closed them down. But here again, like everything, they've gone digital to the web, and there may be four people can operate a pretty virulent hate group on the web, like this Council of Concerned Citizens that the young man that shot the people in the church in Charleston got a roof. He was a poster child for that. This group is a hate group, probably doesn't have two dozen really ardent members who put their material together, but like ISIS, they put out material, and people like Roof are susceptible to that, and they think they're being put upon in some kind of way, and they buy the propaganda these people put out. And maybe only one out of 1,000 that listen to it or go to the website for it turns out to be a dangerous person. So that's the battle of the day. I call it the virtual hate group.
The reason you're in Chattanooga is to speak at a First Amendment dinner. And the First Amendment is more than just freedom of speech, but that is a big part of it. When do these organizations that put that information out there, when have they crossed the line from just speaking their opinion to becoming a hate group that is promoting destruction of other people's rights?
Well, in America, you have the right to hate, but you don't have the right to cross the line to hurt people. Just because a group, let's say, demonizes LGBT people or women or African-Americans or Jews or any other minority group, if they demonize them, and even though they're not necessarily out to hurt them, that's still a hate group. You're saying typically things that aren't accurate or true, distorting the fact. On the other hand, and it's not necessarily an easy case to bring, but if a person who listens to one of these people talk in these groups and goes out and shoots somebody like the person did in South Carolina, you couldn't sue the group for that. You'd have to show that the group had members or agents or employees or leaders who aided and abetted. They said, now if you're going to shoot a black church, the one to shoot is Mother Emanuel ME Church. If you're going to do this, the best time to go is when they're having service, when nobody would think anything of you. See, that's aiding and abetting or lending substantial aid and assistance, or either conspiring. In all of our cases, we've shown that officials in these groups have assisted in people carrying out crimes.
And that's not exactly what you can tie in here, or at least we don't know that.
Well, I don't think in the case in South Carolina that they'll be able to sue any kind of hate group. Probably the lawsuit at all, and I don't know if the families even want to bring this, would be a suit against the father who provided the young man with money to buy a gun, knowing he's going to buy a gun, and having some knowledge, maybe he does, maybe he didn't, about the propensity of this young guy to, you know, to commit some kind of violent act. There may be a lawsuit there, but I don't know if the families want to bring that because they're not seen to be out for money. They're more out for, you know, getting the message across of forgiveness and reconciliation, which I think is an important message.
So now we've spun off into knee-jerk reactions of symbols that were rather ubiquitous prior to now for 150 years, speaking specifically for the Confederate battle flag. And all of a sudden, any viewing of this is considered hate. Is that appropriate, or are we now trampling on the free speech of others?
Well, I don't think we're trampling on the free speech of anybody. Individuals can, you know, paint their house like a Confederate flag. They can put it on their belt buckle, their bumper stickers, and other places. But this Confederate battle flag has not been a flag that's been around 150 years. It may have been originally, but it didn't really get put up until Brown versus Board of Education integrated schools. That's when the states put it up. And that's when it was put on Alabama Capitol and Georgia Capitol and other places. I think Mississippi may have predated that. And it's not truly the Confederate flag. The Confederate flag looks more like the U.S. flag, and that's the reason it wasn't distinguishable enough. I think that state-sponsored symbols is quite different than an individual having a symbol. The First Amendment protects people from the state. It doesn't protect the state in any way, and that's why we have the First Amendment. So it's quite a distinction some people don't really get. I wouldn't be for taking down Confederate memorials in town squares that honor the dead. But to have a school named after Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was a general of the Confederacy and at one time led the Ku Klux Klan founded in Tennessee, but also he was a man that led his troops to just slaughter a group of black soldiers, even though they'd given up and they just went in and slaughtered them, like ISIS might do. So that's not the kind of person. The reason his school's a name for him, though, and his bust is sticking here, there, and yonder, is because he was being honored because he was the South poking their finger in the eyes of the North, is what it really boils down to. That's why those flags were stuck up when they were stuck up. So I think it's good that individuals can put a Confederate flag bumper sticker on their car and can wear a belt buckle and a T-shirt and wave their flags. I think it helps everybody identify who those individuals who have those attitudes. Otherwise, you might not know them.
What is the most important aspect of the First Amendment in your sight?
Well, the First Amendment is the First Amendment because reasons number one, it's the critical distinction between our democracy and our republican form of government than many other countries. Canada, for example, it's illegal to have Nazi propaganda, a Nazi flag. And so in Germany, in America, it's not. I mean, it's a freedom that really there are few exceptions that you can get around trying to suppress either speech or actions or the way you conduct your life. It has to do with personal feelings and expressions, mixing of church and state. If you listen to, I was giving a talk once, and I was talking about the Pledge of Allegiance. And I said, you know, my grammar school teacher had us pledge, and it says one nation with liberty and justice for all. And after the talk, some person says, why'd you leave one nation under God out? I said, well, that wasn't in the Pledge of Allegiance when I took it in 1948 when I was 12 years old. She said, oh, no, George Washington put it in there. Well, the truth of it is it was put in 1954-5 by Eisenhower to kind of distinguish us from the godless communist form of government in the Cold War. Same within God we trust and our money. So people don't want to really understand. This nation was not founded as a religious nation. It's very much not. The first 7-8 presidents of the United States were either Unitarians or deists, and they did not believe in Jesus or God at all. in most people's terms. Eisenhower didn't even go to church, my understanding, until after he was elected president, and so many other people did. But now we've got this kind of this religious bent, this religious litmus test, and the Taliban wants to have a theocracy. They want to, you know, women have to do this, that, and the other. Their people in this United States in a religious right would be very comfortable with the theocracy. They'd want prayers in schools, and they'd have, you know, things that people would have to pledge to, yet they hate the Taliban. They don't realize that, you know, there's a slippery slope once you start getting away from the First Amendment and strict separation of church and state. You know, they say, if you can't say a prayer at a football game, my gosh, the world's going to come to an end. Well, when I was growing up, they didn't say prayers at football games. People weren't thinking about that. They just got out and played the game, you know. But now it's a test of your patriotism, you know, God, guns, and, you know, whatever in the Bible. But, you know, that would probably shock, you know, religious leaders when this country was founded.
Thank you, Morris Dees. For WUTC's Around and About, this is Rabbit.